Okay. Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Clubs and Forum, Connect Your Intellect. You can find Inforum online at commonwealth.org/Inforum, and you can follow the best of our speaker dialogue on Twitter from our handle at InforumSF and watch video of our past Inforums on fora.tv. I'm Joy Nordenstrom. As she just said, I'm founder of Joy of Romance, Inc., and why I'm here today to have the pleasure of interviewing Sam Yagan is probably because my company has a lot to do with romance, and today is a Valentine's Day. At my company, we help individuals create passionate and thriving relationships that stand the test of time. No matter where anyone is on the spectrum of relationship, we can help you with dating services, dating coaching. I'm a certified matchmaker. We also help guys come up with very cool ways on how to propose. And one of our latest services is helping write wedding vows and helping create the story, the love story behind the couple. And I also love helping people, once they've gotten together, stay together and creating fun events around aphrodisiacs. So, ask me more later. In October last year, Sam Yagan was appointed the Chief Executive Officer of Match, Inc. He is also the CEO and co-founder of OkCupid. Sam oversees the management of Match's parent company, IAC's Global Online Dating Portfolio, which comprises over 40 brands around the world. He's been a leader in the dating industry since he co-founded OkCupid in 2003. He and his co-founders grew OkCupid into one of the most popular dating sites in America, amassing nearly 4 million active users. Outside of his primary work and his company, Sam's passion is helping early-stage entrepreneurs. In 2009, he co-founded Accentuate Labs, now TechStars Chicago, a leading startup accelerator. He is an active angel investor and sits on the boards of several startups. If that wasn't enough, Sam also serves as an advisor to several venture capital funds. Sam has a BA with honors in applied mathematics and economics from Harvard College and an MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business. On a personal note, Sam met his wife, Jessica, of 9 years, the very old-fashioned way when he was in high school, before online dating really existed. After taking time apart from their college years, they rekindled their spark and were married 5 years after college. They now live in Chicago with their two beautiful children. Needless to say, Sam is one very busy man, and we are very fortunate to have him with us on this Valentine's Day evening. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you.
So I'm curious, as one of the original co-founders of OkCupid, what were those original brainstorming sessions like in creating what the algorithm was going to be?
The very first conversation we ever had about online dating was my business partner Chris called me up one night. It was very late. He'd been out drinking, and he said, "Sam, we should start a dating site that had a big button. It's just the dating site just has one button on it. It's called the blind date button. And you hit the button, and we'll have algorithms that will just magically set you up on a blind date. And the only thing the site will do is you'll hit the button, and we'll give you a name, a place, and a time. And you will just go meet that person out on a date." And and I said to Chris, you're drunk. Why don't you call me back tomorrow and we can talk about it then?" And I assumed he would not call me back. And sure enough, the next day he calls me and he says, "So Sam, what did you think of that idea?" And I was like, "Well, what are you talking about?" He's like, "The blind date button. We should do it." I was like, "Are we really going to do this? This is crazy." And that was November of 2002. And we spent the next few months brainstorming, thinking about how would we actually go about doing this, and it turns out to be much more complicated than he made it sound in day one. And by that spring, we decided to start OkCupid, and that was those were the early brainstorms. The early brainstorm was really just around what was this end product we wanted to create, and then all the algorithmic work obviously began then.
To get more specific on that algorithm, was there any science involved behind it, and what questions you asked?
There was a lot of math in particular. So, you know, OkCupid is the question to the age-old, is the answer to the age-old question, what happens when four math majors start a dating site, right? So it's like, you know, it's our dream in many ways. But we started OkCupid, there were three big dating sites when we launched OkCupid. There was Match.com, eHarmony, and Yahoo were the three big dating sites. And the one that had gotten, that was the newest, that had gotten the most notoriety was eHarmony. And the founding premise of eHarmony was that they had come up with the formula for love. That they basically promised you a soulmate. They said, we're going to peer into your soul. We're going to ask you hundreds, thousands, I don't know, millions of questions. The survey never seems to end. And at the end, we're going to have our team of psychologists come up with these theories, and we're going to give you a soulmate. Of course, that concept falls on its face immediately because the first day they email you five people. So how could they, you know, one soulmate is what they claim to give you, but yet they give you a choice of five, and then they send you five more the next day and five more the next day. So it's questionable whether that math holds. But we right away said it just doesn't make any sense that that's the way matchmaking would work, that there was going to be one algorithm that would work for every single person, regardless of age, sexual orientation, what have you. And so we said, well, we're a bunch of math majors. We don't know anything about dating. I can vouch for that. All of our college girlfriends will probably vouch for that too. And so we said, well, okay, well, we don't know anything about psychology or dating, but here's what we can do. What we are really good at is simulating the offline world online. So people have been dating for generations, for millennia, right? Forever, literally, people have been dating. And so we said, rather than reinvent dating, why don't we use our mathematical, quantitative, analytical skills to basically take what people already do and turn it into an algorithm? And so, you know, the sort of analogy I would use is, you know, let's say you're a you know, single woman, and your best friend from college calls you up and says, hey, Joy, I've got a great guy I want to set you up on a date with. Well, no matter what, no matter how much you trust her, she could be your, you know, your BFF for years. You're not just going to say yes. You're going to ask her questions. Your questions might be about his religion. They might be about his job. Maybe his drug use. Maybe sex. Who knows? You're going to have your own set of questions, and you're going to weight each of those questions differently from other people in the audience. And you're going to ask different questions from everyone else in the audience, but you're going to be curious about the answers to their questions too. So he said, really, people have in their minds this idea of deal breakers, this idea of, here's the things I really want to know about someone before going on a date. So what we said was, let's create an algorithm that allows people to basically put their Q&A, their deal breakers, out for other people to answer. And that was really the key insight we had, was that people already have a method for filtering and making dating decisions. Let's digitize that. Let's take that algorithm that people have been using forever and put it online. And that's really the core of the OkCupid algorithm. There's a bunch of math I can talk about. There's a really interesting sub-algorithm about how we rank order the questions. We've had 40,000 questions submitted from the, you know, one of my favorites is, which do you value most? Choose the one of the following that you value most: money, power, or fame, right? And I think that, you know, it's an interesting question, and you can imagine that someone's answer to that reveals something about them. One of the perhaps less useful questions is that someone submitted is: you're walking down the street and someone floats by naked. Which is more intriguing to you, that they're naked or that they're floating? You know, so. You know, I'll let you all think about that. So you can imagine. To me, it's that they're floating, but, you know, whatever. But you can imagine. So over the course of the almost, we'll be celebrating our 10-year anniversary of OkCupid later this year. In the course of the 10 years, we've had hundreds of thousands of questions submitted. And so one of the things we have to do, one algorithm we have to do, is how do you rank order the questions to make sure that the floating naked question doesn't come quite at the top, you know, in terms of how we sort the questions. So, that's basically roughly how the algorithm works, and a couple examples of the questions that we have. And we don't write any of the questions. We wrote the first dozen or so that seeded everything, but after that it was in the user's hands to decide what was important. And you can see the questions change over time. They change with, you know, what's happening in society, whether it's politics or other, you know, pop culture.
I love that, because on eHarmony you're stuck with that 1 hour and 15 minute quiz.
And then they reject you.
I was rejected.
No, I was rejected too.
I was rejected. That makes us cool.
They don't like geeks, what can I say?
So with that, being able to kind of put the power back into the user's hands, have you found that you've been able to see a lot more success in actual engagements and marriage, if that's where their dating is wanting to go?
One of the interesting challenges about running an online dating site is what it even means to be successful. It's you know, your question presumes that the goal of online dating is marriage, which for many people it is. For many people, they're on online dating sites to meet new people. They move to a new city, and it's a nice way to get to know a bunch of new people. But even for people who are marriage-minded, which is the majority of users of online dating sites, if you think about it, the dating site's job is fundamentally to get you to a first date. It's ultimately what we can promise. We can promise you good first dates. Or we can strive to promise you good first dates. What happens after that first date, whether you got to that first date by means of an online dating site, whether you got to that because your mother set you up, you met them, you know, you ran into someone at the coffee shop, after that the relationship is going to take a course pretty independent of how it got there. And you might go on, you know, half a dozen dates with someone, and then decide, okay, well, we're going to take down our OkCupid profiles. Well, you're still years away, most likely, from a marriage happening, right? I mean, you're going to date for a while, then you're going to get engaged, then you're going to get married. And you may think to come back to your dating site that brought you together and say, hey, thanks. It's the least you could do, actually. but we don't know. Now, we know broadly that 1 in 5 relationships today started on an online dating site, which when we first found that, Match.com did that study, and when we first found that, it was, I think, eye-opening to all of us. I think we all knew that we were changing the world and making a real difference in people's lives, but I didn't even think it was going to be quite that big. So it was so reaffirming, I think, of all the work that we've done. So we know we're successful. And by the way, the other way we know we're successful is that our users stick around. They leave when they find a relationship, but then they come back. And that's what's so ultimately is compelling. But think about it. The average person has over 10 relationships where they consider a relationship before they end up getting married. So that's not failure. It's not failure to be on an online dating site, date someone for 6 months, and have that relationship not work. That's success, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to have those six-month relationships that don't work out over the course of your life before you get to that one that is, you know, if you get married if that's what you're seeking. So I think there's this misconception that when two people get married on a dating site, that somehow the dating site is upset that we've lost users. Nothing could be further than the truth. That's people we have evangelizing and advocating for our product. That's great. Or that somehow the dating site should be sad when the relationship that we spawned ends up not working. I mean, if you as a matchmaker, as a friend of someone, set up two friends on a date and they date for a year and then don't work out, I'm not disappointed in myself. I'm like, oh god, I did a terrible job. They dated for a year. I would think, wow, that's pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
And so the same applies, I think, to a dating site. So you know, our goal is to get you out on dates and have those dates lead to interesting relationships, but not necessarily your terminal relationship that, you know, is your What? Terminal meaning last relationship. That's what you mean.
Speaking of that, If you were single now, do you think that you would choose to use online dating?
Of course. I think your question is a little bit anachronistic. That's like saying, should someone today choose e-commerce? Well, yeah. If you're a consumer in our society, you should buy things online, and you should buy things offline, and you should buy things at flea markets, and you should buy things at fancy stores, and you should buy things from a whole variety of vendors. Like, it would be so bizarre for you to classify yourself, I'm an online shopper. I'm an offline shopper. It's just that doesn't make sense. Now, in 1996, there were people who were those crazy online shoppers. Well, you buy stuff on the internet? That's crazy. In fact, my first, this is perhaps a relevant story, my very first online purchase was for my girlfriend on Valentine's Day in 1996. That was staged. It was a nice glow-in-the-dark heart, actually, that I had to call to give him my credit card. So just as in the mid-90s, there was a distinction between online shopping and offline shopping, but now that's so dated. 5 years ago, you would have asked someone, do you online date? And maybe you ask that still today, but in 5 years, if you're single, you're going to online date and offline date, and you're going to use mobile dating apps, and you're going to use traditional dating apps, and you're going to use blind dating apps, and you're going to use all kinds of things, and you're going to offline date through friends, and you're going to offline date through work, and you're going to offline date at the gym. You have a whole portfolio of dating options, and it just doesn't make sense to restrict yourself to a small subset of those. Hmm. So I would online date, I would offline date, I would date as many beautiful women as possible.
That being said, my clients often come to me and they have this feeling that they have been shopped for online. And they feel like there's a big line of contenders waiting behind them, and that when they're on that first date, they have that sensation that somebody just clicks off when the checklist didn't match exactly what they wanted. What advice would you give for people who are online dating to be able to make the person on the first date feel more comfortable and not like they've been shopped for?
I'm just working through the shopped for concept. I mean, I think that's not unique to online dating. Right? Whenever someone asks me a question about online dating, I just think, how does it work in offline dating? Because it works 99% of the time, online dating works the same way. So if you were set up with someone on a first date, I guess you're still shopped for, right? I mean, there's someone else that they could go on a date with tomorrow. There was someone else they went on a date with yesterday. So I don't know that's unique to online dating. I think whenever you meet someone new, whether it's, by the way, in a dating context or on a job interview, there's that sort of period where you're getting to feel comfortable with someone, where you're sort of trying to build a common ground, where you're trying to find, break the ice, start a conversation. So I don't know that shopped for feeling is something that is either unique to online dating or unique to dating. I think it's just when you meet someone new, you're really trying to build that camaraderie, that common ground. The good thing about online dating is you have these profiles, right? And if you've spent the time to read through what they've said and you've looked through their photos and you've gotten a sense for where they're picked, you know, maybe they have pictures from places they've traveled or they have pictures of kids that they have or whatever it is, you can use that to build a common ground. So unlike just meeting someone, you know, in a job interview where all you know about them is their resume, you know, where you have to really work a lot harder, I think the beautiful thing about online dating is you have a lot more information to go on.
I like that. That's a good way to look at it. How do you, in OkCupid, I know that you ask the people who are taking their profiles down to fill out a questionnaire. What are some of the interesting things that you've found when you've compared their profiles throughout the years?
In general, people leave OkCupid when they found success. When they're in a relationship, that's typically the reason. And what we see over time is that we ask a number of questions. Well, we have a number of options in terms of why you're leaving, and we've seen a huge shift in terms of from I met someone through offline channels versus I met someone either on I'm in a relationship with someone on OkCupid or on another online dating site. And so the percentage, and that kind of ties into the 1 in 5 relationships that I quoted earlier. What we're finding is before people, 10 years ago when we launched OkCupid, people were on OkCupid, but they were often finding more of their success offline than online. And now when people are leaving OkCupid, the plurality of the time, it's because that they find someone either on OkCupid or on another online dating site. So I think online dating works. It just works.
How do you feel that people approach the difference between OkCupid and Match.com? Why would one, other than OkCupid being free, why would somebody choose Match over OkCupid?
I used to believe, the mathematician in me believes that in an efficient market, you just want the largest marketplace possible, and that this should be a winner-take-all market, right? There's only one eBay, there's only one Craigslist, and there's only one PayPal. And in all of these sort of transactional markets where you're trying to meet or transact with someone you don't know, as far as I know, all the internet marketplaces like that, almost all of them are winner-take-all. And so part of the hypothesis in starting OkCupid was that if we ever got big enough, we could just sort of, there'd be some tipping point at which we would just take over the entire market and the other dating sites would go away. those were in my younger, more rash days that I used to believe that. And the reality is that dating is, with all due respect to Google as a search engine, dating, your search for companionship is the most important search that people conduct in their life. We are the ultimate most important search engine on the web. And tied in with being so important, the reason it's so important is because it's so intimate, because it is a reflection of your personality. It's not just give me the biggest, the best, the fastest, whatever Google and eBay are. People want to meet someone in a certain context. And Match and OkCupid provide different contexts. They're different products. One of the great things that Match has really been innovating on is their events, for example. So Match has been doing thousands of events across the country. I think a couple hundred thousand people just in the last 6 months have gone to whether it's an interest-based event like a sushi making class or a happy hour or what have you. Hundreds of thousands of people have gone and met at these offline events. That's something that OkCupid doesn't really offer at scale that Match does. If you want customer service, you don't get that at OkCupid. You can email. I'll probably get it, sadly. And your email will promptly be ignored. But if you want someone to talk to, you can pick up the phone, and you'll get someone to Match who will talk to you. So it's different products. It's different people. OkCupid has a really snarky tone, which I love. Probably most of you in here probably like. But there's a lot of people who are like, think it's juvenile and don't think it's funny. So I think there's a set of people that really find themselves attracted to the OkCupid tone and the product. And there's a whole bunch of people who, love what Match is doing. And the reality is that OkCupid has grown tremendously over the last 3 years especially. And Match has had its most rapid period of growth, certainly in the last decade, maybe ever, in the last 3 years. So we've seen both of these sites, which you would think are these, two such, fierce competitors in the marketplace, they both have their most rapid periods of growth in the same overlapping time period. So the reality is there's just, different sites for different people.
Okay.
And I think that's great. I mean, we own 30 different sites in the U.S., and they're all doing great.
Wonderful. How does the algorithm change for Match.com in other countries?
I won't talk just about Match.com specifically, but dating, in addition to being very intimate and personal for the people who are dating it, who are the actual daters, it's very idiosyncratic by geography, by country, and people date in different ways, and the algorithms, in some cases, the gender dynamic, in some cases, is where the local culture skews toward females having more control or males having more control or who's the typical initiator. So the algorithms and the products are all designed to try again, online dating mirrors offline dating. So, if offline dating works a certain way in a certain culture, you're going to see online dating products that tend to fit that mold rather than reinvent. We don't want to teach people a new way to date. That's largely a fool's errand. I think we want to let people date the way that they already date, but use technology to make it more efficient, more fun, more fast, and faster.
Okay. With that, going into other countries, what do you see as the most unique aspect of wanting to go offline quickly, like they're doing with Match events? Are Match events happening globally? And if so, how many people are now wanting to move back into connecting face-to-face quickly?
So let me get to that answer by telling you a quick history of online dating. Online dating is 20 years old this year. So Match.com was founded in 1993.
Wow.
And so it sort of is a good time to be reflective and sort of look through the decades. So here's how I think about the sort of the two past decades and the decade to come. Decade number one of online dating was weirdos in their underwear, in their basements. You know, who was even on the internet in 1993? Like, seriously, weirdos. I was. But therefore, the only other people to date were those fellow nerds, geeks, and weirdos. And I use that term very affectionately. I am one of those people. So that was what the first decade of online dating was. It was these early adopters who were doing this crazy thing of meeting someone on the internet. It was crazy. And then sort of in the early 2000s, right around when OkCupid launched, you saw an eating harmony. You saw this huge shift toward algorithms. Okay, so it became those nerds came out from their basements in their underwear and they started writing the algorithms to let other people date. And so eHarmony had their algorithm. Match really transformed from being largely a site where you would just go and type in search queries and sort of just get results to a very algorithm-based product where they said, okay, well, we have all these users. Let's actually use analysis and algorithms to predict who you're going to be compatible with. OkCupid launched, again, with this whole math data-driven analysis algorithm. And so that sort of took us to where we are now, right? So you have the leading dating sites in the U.S. predominantly are highly, highly, highly algorithm-driven, and these algorithms have evolved and been sort of developed over the last decade. And where we are now is we have this point of conversion largely driven by the mass adoption of mobile technology, smartphones in particular. Dating is I wouldn't say it's a unique category, but it's one of the most compelling attribute, or the most core attribute of online dating, is it's an online product, it's a digital product where the explicit goal, the primary goal, is to meet another person, right? Thus, mobility and location are inherent in the product. You have to end up in the same place at the same time with another OkCupid user or another Match.com user. That is the goal. So that is inherently something that is A, offline, but B, is enabled by the power of your smartphone. So so now to answer your question, where we are today is we have the people, we have the algorithms, and we now have the technology to take that next step from just facilitating the online dialogue, which is really all we could do 5 years ago, even 3 years ago. Our goal was just to get you chatting. And what you did was kind of up to you. Now, with the power of your smartphone, we can go on the date with you.
That's spooky.
It is spooky. but, you know, there's a day coming very soon, and some sites already allow you to do this, where you check into your dates, and you give us feedback in pretty real time how that date's going. Like, rate your date. You know, like, how did that go? Tell us how it went. But that's so critical to our algorithms. It is really, and it's where the industry is going. And so offline, so if you think decade one was about early adopters, decade two is about algorithms, and decade three is going to be about dating site, taking the online out of online dating, and driving and really facilitating the offline dates, which is what we all started to do in the first place. And that reality of being with you from the time you sign up to our site to the time you are actually on the date, being able to be with you that entire process, is where the industry is going. And if you look at all the new startups that are launching in online dating are all about the date, the offline, get together with a real person at a real place and meet each other.
I love that. You've been able to make online dating much more personal. I know my clients would love to have me as like a little earbud in their ear whispering what to do and what not to do.
It's like a reality show.
Yeah. So So that's cool that it's moving in that direction for online dating. I know that you had an interesting story about OkCupid daters and how frequently people are meeting on OkCupid and we don't even realize that they could be around us right now. Can you tell me that story?
Yeah, I just got an email literally on Monday of this week from a user who was to meet this person. It was a guy who wrote us, and he said, "Okay, well, I was going to meet this girl at this bar." And so he goes and he sees this woman sitting at a table by herself, and you know, she kind of makes eye contact and stands up to give him a hug. So he's like, "Okay, great." And so they sit down, and the first 20 minutes of their conversation are kind of good, but she keeps sort of making references that aren't quite right. She's like, you know, she's like, "So, you know, you studied political science," and he's like, "No, English." And he's thinking to himself, "Okay, well, you know, maybe, you know, she's online dating. She's, you know, maybe she's thinking of someone else." And he's like, "You're in public health?" And she's like, "Biz dev." And he's like, "Okay." And then so finally it's like, you know, 20 minutes in, and he's like, "I'm so glad you suggested this bar. I've been wanting to come here for weeks or for months, and I'm thanks so much." And she's like, "You suggested this bar." And that was sort of the moment where they're like, and he's like, "You're Jen, right?" And she's like, "No." And so then this starts this search to find the other mismatched date at the bar. And sure enough, they see they look around, and sure enough, there's another date happening. And the guys actually look alike. It turns out, you're not like super alike. And he's like. "That dude looks like me." And she's like, "That's the guy I'm supposed to be on a date with." And so they're like, "This is going to be a blast." And so sure enough, they walk over to this other couple, and they're like, "How'd you guys meet?" "On OkCupid." And they're like, "How did you know?" And they're like, "Because you're not supposed to be on this date together." And so they end up merging the date. They end up turning into a double date, and they spend like the rest of the evening. And he said there were 16 people in this bar, and 4 of them were on OkCupid dates. And that's, you know, just one of the many dating sites out there. Like, there are probably a Match.com date there too. And like online dating is so prevalent. And there, this was just a great real world example. And in the exchange, you know, when I emailed it back, and he's like, "Well, you know," he's like, "there's this weird balance when you're on a first date with someone," because, and he's like, "I definitely recognize that there were some sort of, you know, some things that weren't quite right about that, but you don't want to seem like you studied their profile. Like, no, I know exactly where you went to school. I know exactly." So he's like, "I kind of just kind of let them go early on because I didn't want to freak her out that I like knew more about her than, you know, I was supposed to." So anyway, one of the best parts of my job is we get all these emails from our users, and I actually read a bunch of them because it's some of them are humorous, but it's also so fulfilling to know that, you know, we are making a difference in people's lives, and people are out there meeting people, and it's such a great thing to be spending my life doing.
Well, that seems very rewarding. I wanted to let the audience know that we're going to be taking questions in just a few minutes. So if you could start lining up on the mics on either aisle, and please remember that we're looking for short, one-part questions, no long stories. Thank you very much. So speaking of rewarding, do you have any statistics to share with us of the first dates that turned into marriages from any of the properties that you work with?
It's very hard to go in that direction. Like I said, we know that 20% of relationships start online, but it's very hard to know what percent of dates turn into relationships because we don't go on the date with you yet. I don't even know which, like, there might be OkCupid dates happening right now. How would I know? I would have no way of knowing that. So it's very hard. I'm not trying to dodge the question. It's just very hard. It's very hard to know how many OkCupid or Match.com dates are happening tonight in the world. We just don't know that.
Okay. Well, we're ready to take questions. I will start with you.
Great. So in online dating, how well do people really know themselves? In terms of when they describe themselves, how close is that to what somebody else would describe them as? And when they say what they want, how close is that to what they really want?
Those are two. He violated your one-part policy.
Yeah.
The second part, I think, is more interesting. The first part, again, there's nothing unique about online dating. When you're dating in general, how well do you know yourself? Again, that's not specific to online. How well do people, you know, anywhere know themselves? I don't think I'm particularly expert to talk about that. We find a lot of interesting data on people who say they like blondes but click on brunettes, for example. So that's the kind of data we have. So, you know, I think in economic terms you would talk about it, stated preference versus revealed preferences. And a lot of the algorithmic work we do is to, obviously we start with what you say you prefer, but we will often violate your stated preferences. So you might tell us, you know, only show me people like this, but if we see that you have on your own found people who violate your stated preferences, we will start to show you people who violate your stated preferences. I think the single biggest thing that people overstate is politics. I could never date someone who voted for fill in the blank. And yes, you can.
Hi, thanks for talking to us on Valentine's. Hope your wife's not upset. I just wanted to say, with Match.com, OkCupid, 30 different dating sites, worldwide presence, domestic presence, you have information on PhD, master's, 6'0", 195 pounds, blonde hair, blue-eyed, overweight, exercises, education, likes, dislikes. Do you sell your data to third parties?
I'm happy to talk about how we use data. And the first thing I'll say is that we use data differently across our sites, right? And that's largely driven by the fact that our sites have different business models. So a site like OkCupid, which is free, has more non-traditional revenue models than a site like Match.com, which is subscription-based. So on a site like Match, no, never. Like, it's a very sort of definitive no. On a site like OkCupid, the answer is no, we don't sell your data. Do we use your data in a bunch of different ways? Yes. When an advertiser comes to us and says, we want to target based on the data you have, we don't give them your data, but we only show their ads to you if you qualify. So you could implicitly think that, well, if I ended up clicking on their ad and going to their site, they can deduce that I meet their targeting requirements. So in that way, sure. If any of you have read the OkCupid blog, you'll see that the entire existence of the OkCupid blog is predicated on the fact that we take data and sell it, if you will, to the public. We package it. It's marketing. So yes, we do in that way. And but we're very, 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 very serious about privacy. And we will never sell any personally identifiable information, ever.
Sam, one of the things that I just recently read was the question, if you want to find out whether or not she or your date would possibly sleep with you on the first date, Do you know what the question was?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Well, would you like to share that?
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
So we have thousands and thousands of questions in the OkCupid database. One of the questions is whether you'd be willing to sleep with someone on the first date. And so we took all the people who said yes, and went to the database, and we said, what other questions in the database are correlated with this question? Seems like a useful thing to know. And what we found was striking. For men, there were three questions that were correlated. The first was, do you find the prospect of nuclear war exciting? And if you answer yes, you are more likely to sleep with someone on the first date. The second question, and the third one is escaping my mind, the second question is, would you ever under any circumstances kill another person? And if you said yes, you were more likely to sleep with someone on the first date. So we were horrified by this. And so then we were like, okay, well, those are both for men. So, well, what is it for women that's correlated? And it turns out that in the entire database of our thousands of questions, there was only one question for women that was statistically significantly correlated with a woman's willingness to sleep with you on the first date. And that question is, do you like the taste of beer? That's it. So it's great because when I give talks for like corporate audiences, I will just very casually be like, hey ladies, who likes the taste of beer? You know, all these women who raise their hands are like, woo! And then I'm like, all right, gentlemen, look around. And it horrifies the poor ladies. But yes, that is.
Over here.
Actually, that was my question because I'd read that about the beer, and I was wondering with all the data that you have, if there were any other correlations that you found.
There are a ton. I would direct you to our blog, which is just blog.okcupid.com. We've got, you know, more posts than you'll know what to do with for the correlated questions. So that's other. I could sit here and tell you jokes for the rest of the hour, but that doesn't seem like a good use of our time.
Hey Sam, I'm a software engineer. My name is Suyash. I'm a pretty busy guy at work, and you know, evenings I'm generally at tech meetups, so not a lot of opportunities to meet like a lot of women in my area of field. But when I look at online dating, I mostly see it as a great tool for like busy professionals. So, but when I've tried it, I haven't had good luck. Reason probably being women get a lot of emails and, you know, and a lot of guys competing for the same attractive women. But I've had more luck like offline. So I'm wondering, like, is that intentional on your part or like from a...
Yes, I told my engineers, that guy, don't let him date.
But I mean, for you, it would be like customers, like they're not converting, right? They're dropping off because I dropped off. So like, what are you doing to balance that equation out? And another question I had about data is you probably have an API that way you expose the data, right?
Actually, we don't. And the part of that goes back to privacy concerns where we don't let third parties access our data. Wow. So the first question was, no, we're not singling you out. I think you asked that question. There's a phenomenon. So again, my rule of thumb, you ask me an online dating question, think about it offline first. There's something interesting that happens offline, which is if you're at a bar and there's half a dozen women at the bar, and there's one that has like six studly guys hitting on her. Okay? She's the hottest. And then there's like the second hottest girl has like three guys. And like the third hottest girl doesn't have any guys talking to her. Which one are you going to go talk to? Right? You're going to go talk to the third girl. Because your odds are so much better. Right? Because you're just doing an optimization in your head. You have your algorithms. I'm not the only one with algorithms. You're going to be like, well, I'm going to go start here. I'm going to keep my eye on her. And if she frees up, boom, I might go there. But you're going to go to girl three first. And that phenomenon is not replicable online. Because you don't know for any given girl. I don't mean to be pejorative. But for any given woman, you don't know how many other guys are talking to her. But we do. And so part of our job is to balance the amount of attention that people get on the site. And one thing that OkCupid does, to be clear, this is not something Match does. One thing that OkCupid does is people rate your attractiveness. So everyone on OkCupid has an attractiveness score. We know how hot the world thinks you are. And so one thing that we do is if you are a guy and you are a 2.2 out of 5, we're not going to show you the 4.9 out of 5 girls. So last month, one of my friends came up to me and said, Sam, I hate OkCupid. Why is that? All the girls are ugly. Then I explained to him why. And I'm like, you're only seeing the ugly ones. So anyway, part of the balancing that you have to do is to figure out who's going to be compatible, who's likely to actually work out in a conversation.
My question is kind of two part. So,
people are just explicitly violating all your rules.
They go together.
Okay.
They actually go together. So the first part is, what is the difference in the algorithm that OkCupid uses versus the algorithm that Match uses? And then the other part of that, is there a difference in the number of marriages as a result of that? Because I have all the friends I know, the only ones who have gotten married have been on Match.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go into the detailed differences between the algorithms. There is no question that Match generates more marriages than OkCupid. The reason for that, though, is not so much algorithmic as it is the user base. The user base on Match is a more marriage-intended group of people than the OkCupid user base. So that then it's a selection bias, basically. You have a selection effect that brings more marriage-minded people to Match than to OkCupid. And so thus, it has more marriages.
Over here.
So, the best thing I like on OkCupid is the OkTrends. I like how you really number crunch data. So looking at the data, what would you say is the best advice you would give to both men and women to be successful in OK or in dating, online dating?
Sure. So I would say there's a bunch of them. And again, I think back to offline dating. So there's some nice analogies. First thing is be specific. Everybody likes to travel. So if somebody says, "Hey, what do you like?" "I like to travel." That's a conversation killer. But if you say, "I like to go backpacking in South America," that's a conversation starter, right? So the first thing is be conversational. Your goal is to try to start a conversation. I think there are also some smaller things like spelling and grammar matter. And my analogy to offline, it's like spelling and grammar is like the equivalent of brushing your teeth. You know, it's like if you don't care enough to like brush your teeth before you go meet someone and your breath stinks, like that's the equivalent of like if you don't bother to like spell check or think about how you're coming across, then you probably don't care enough about the person you're meeting, care enough about yourself. So in general, you're putting your best foot forward and, you know, you need to be thoughtful about that. And, there are other things. If you want to look younger, don't use a flash. We found that using a flash on your photo adds 7 years of age to your appearance. There are little sort of blocking and tackling things like that. But in general, again, the analogy is to offline dating. And just you want to put your best foot forward. And the same amount of thought you would put into sort of what you wear and how you present yourself when you're out at a bar or whatever is the same thing you should do for your online dating profile.
Speaking of that, one of the scary statistics that I've heard is online daters, that there's a number of people who are actually married that are dating online. Is there a way to eradicate their profiles if you find that somebody's using it just to...
Okay, so now I'm a broken record. Online dating is like offline dating. So if you go to a bar tonight, you're going to get hit on by mostly single people and probably a couple married people. And so I would be lying to you if I said there are no married people on online dating sites. There are. Is it the preponderance? No. It's a small, small, small minority of people who do that. And nothing you can do about it.
Nothing. Okay, next question.
In the last few years, there's been a lot of interest in, let's say, hacking the dating scene. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in this room that have read the book The Game by Neil Strauss. So in the offline world, you know, you can sort of, you know, hack getting to know people and in some sense pretend to then gain that extra advantage. Can you give us any insight into the way the algorithms work so that you could do that in the online world? You've given us a few hints tonight. Is there anything in particular that people can do to, let's say, hack OkCupid and let's say, go from a 2.2 to a 5.0?
Right. We designed our algorithms to not be gameable. Like that was one of, as we thought about it, we said, look, if we design algorithms, smart people are going to figure out how to exploit them. And so the power of the OkCupid system is that because it's based on people's these deal-breaker questions, there is no right answer. There's no right way to get through the questions we have. Because when you say that the person floating by naked, you're more compelled that they're naked, that's not the right or wrong answer. That's just going to appeal to a set of people who find that to be the more compelling part of this floating person. So it's not really gameable that way. I mean, to the extent that OkCupid is gameable, the algorithms are gameable, it's really about being on your best behavior and being a good community member. So if you reply to messages people send you, you'll get more messages because we're going to be like, oh, someone who sends a message to this person is likely to get a reply. If you never reply to any messages, then over time you're going to get degraded. You're going to go down big time. And so again, but if you're a good participant in the community and you log in frequently and you edit your profile and you're sort of keeping your presence fresh, then you're going to do better than someone who logs in rarely, doesn't reply to messages, doesn't initiate communication with other people, because that person is less valuable to the other members of the community.
Okay. Thanks. Match.com gives you a really easy way to say no thanks to someone if you're not interested. And I don't remember if OkCupid does that. But most
importantly, by definition, it's not really easy.
No one ever, I think it's just the button that you hit. But most importantly, no, I don't think everyone ever uses it. And I think one big difference between traditional and online dating is online it's much easier to be passive and distracted and probably not end up meeting people who you would have otherwise met in person for a million kind of silly reasons. And I'm wondering what do you think dating sites can do better in terms of actually encouraging people to be responsive in the first place?
I don't know that I agree with you. So you said a bunch of things. I don't know if I agree with really the setup, but let's focus on the last part, which is what online dating sites can do to encourage people to be active, not passive, I think is what you said. And I'll just go back to the answer I just gave, which is certainly at OkCupid, the algorithms reward engagement with the community. And if you are just passive and you don't do anything, you are going to show up less frequently in people's search results. You're going to get less messages, and over time, your experience at OkCupid is going to get worse. So I think that's probably my answer.
So congratulations on your 10th year. That's awesome. My question is a pretty quick one. Is the blog's not dead, is it?
The blog is coming back.
It's coming back?
Yeah.
Good. Anxiously awaiting.
Okay, thanks.
So I know of three long-term relationships that have started in my immediate kind of friend group from OkCupid. And for one of them, it was the number one match for like the West Coast. And the other two matches, one was like a 78% match, one was like a 65% match. Do you have any data that talks about how people who find success, and to the extent you're able to actually quantify it, how many of those are actually a high match percentage versus not?
There's clearly a correlation between your match percentage and your likelihood of having a productive first date, a fun first date. I'll make a different analogy this time. It's like when you do a search result on Google, it's like usually the first one is the one you want, but sometimes you have to scroll down, you know, to the bottom of the first page. Sometimes you're on the second page, but rarely to the third page kind of thing. And I made the analogy to Google earlier. We don't make the claim that the best match on OkCupid is your soulmate. We're simply saying that we think you should start at the top and go down. And depending on what you're actually looking for, depending on how well, you know, one reason someone could be a 65% match, by the way, we confidence adjust all of our compatibility percentages. So it could be that the 95% person or whatever has just answered hundreds of questions, and the 65% person may have just answered a dozen questions. And so we just don't know enough about them to give them a 90% match. Said another way, there are some people for whom their best match in the world is a 99% match. There are some people for whom your best match in the world is a 65% match because you haven't given us enough data to confidently say this person is a 99% match. So there's a bunch of things that could be going on there. But in general, the higher the match percentage, the more likely you are to have a good first date.
We discussed privacy a little bit earlier. I was in an airport once and filled out something like 400 questions.
Thank you.
And so, you know, we have, I feel like, and other people have said, Zuckerberg has said, you know, there's changing senses of what privacy is. How long before we can expect something like 23andMe, your 23andMe profile to be linked to your OkCupid so people can search through all of your genes and figure out if you're histone compatible and all that?
I think there has to be a value exchange. And the reason OkCupid is able to... Someone asked me earlier, I think, how do we know that the algorithms work? And part of it is because people continue to contribute data to the algorithm. And what's really compelling is if you answer 10 questions on OkCupid and then you do a search, you'll find OK matches. And you'll answer 25 more questions, and the matches get better. Then you answer 25 more questions again, and the matches get better. And about 233 questions in, the matches don't get any better. And then you stop answering questions, right? So we can tell just by when people stop answering questions, when it's not worth it to give us more data, because the cost of giving us data is not recouped by the, you know, they're not thinking about that, but they're basically saying, I'm going to stop answering questions, it's not worth it anymore, right? And so what we see is that there is a huge, for most people, it's a couple hundred questions, a couple hundred pieces of data they're willing to put into the machine because the machine is still giving them really, really good output. And so, you know, I think before somebody would give me their DNA, they would have to really believe that they're going to get something awesome coming out. Otherwise, they're going to be, why am I going to give Sam my DNA? That's crazy. I'm going to do that. And so, really, I think, you know, if someone comes up with a product that can take your DNA and give you a soulmate on the spot, people would do it. Right? It ultimately is a value exchange story.
So you don't see anybody offering some linkage service between 23andMe or something like that?
So the state of the art right now is such that no one has discovered that your genetic code contains in it the genetic code of you. But that's what it would take. But that's essentially what it would take.
Okay. Next question.
Okay, so this would be a question about advice on a search. Imagine a male who has traveled to over 100 countries, was on a bicycle in the Himalayas, 18,000 feet, and has an internationally recognized career. A couple of months ago, taught at MIT, was at Google, is at Facebook, is wealthy. How would you search for someone, a lady, who can relate to these kind of experiences?
I think you just did.
See him afterwards.
What is she?
Over
there.
I don't know that I have a great answer for you.
So let me make a comment. I actually browsed through both Match and OkCupid. I browsed through profiles quite extensively, and I believe that it's very hard to find on these websites a lady who is really good quality. And maybe this is because you are not showing me. Maybe this is because you are not showing this male the right ladies. And it's not only about the looks, but also about the intelligence, a kind of a mix. So perhaps there is something in your algorithms that really needs a little bit of work.
My takeaway from there is that we need to find a way to incorporate IQ into our match percentage. I will work on it.
Hello. So I was just wondering about how dating sites decide to charge and why OkCupid doesn't charge, and if, you know, there's decisions in why it's by month, or, you know, how it kind of affects the user experience based on how the sites charge.
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything unique to online dating in that question, right? Like every business, when they launch, you have to come up with a business model, and whether it's online or offline, like some people are the high-priced products, some people are the low-priced products, and you know the examples that I gave earlier, like you know there are things that Match invests in, offline events. Those don't just happen, right? It takes work. You have to plan those. You have to make them happen. Having someone that picks up the phone when you call, that you know. That doesn't happen magically like that. Those are costs. So, So part of it is just, like you would see in any industry, there are people who are going to say, I'm going to offer a higher-end product, and I'm going to charge more money. And there are some people who are going to say, well, I'm going to offer a lower-end product, and I'm going to charge less money. And so I think you see... if what you value is customer service, if what you value is offline events, then yeah. If what you value, if it's kind of like a more of a do-it-yourself. Like, OkCupid is much more of a do-it-yourself dating site than a site like Matches. That's not, maybe lower end is the wrong term, but like, there's just a level of, there's just a product spectrum, and the product spectrums have different costs, and thus have different revenue models with them. Like, I don't think it's any different from like, why do some, music sites charge, why are some music sites for free? It's just different products.
Do we have time for one more question.
Do you like the taste of beer?
No, I'm not a woman. It doesn't matter. You have to ask Joy if she likes the taste of beer.
Okay, that was fast enough. We can go with one more.
Hi. I was wondering if you would consider, the notion of beauty is in the eye of the beholder and the exception that confirms the rule. And it's somewhat linked to that gentleman over there regarding the Himalayas and all that stuff. Because I was...
Maybe you guys should meet up afterwards.
Who knows? But the thing is, you could be considered by the world maybe hotter, right? A higher number. But you're somebody who considers intelligence and a quick wit, to trump the looks. So could you opt... Could there be an option where
I see where you're going with this. The banding that I described earlier, it's not a strict banding, right? So there's a lot of things that go into the algorithm, and the by far the most important thing in the algorithm is the questions you've answered. And so what we find, let me start. What we care most about is your psychological compatibility, the fact that you go on a first date and have a good time together. That's what we're maximizing. The attractiveness is really a more of a user-driven thing because you have to get people to click on the photo to go to see the profile.
Yeah, I got how you got there, but I just wanted to address, the exceptions. And I think maybe I'm not the only one in this audience or, that are potentially your users where you can acknowledge that part, but... What really makes you tick and rocks your world and things like that is not only that appearance thing, right?
Right. The appearance is only a small part of the algorithm, so it's probably not impacting.
I brought it up just because you were saying that, not everybody
gets
to see everyone.
We need to wrap up the question now. We are now ending all of Inform and Events by asking our speakers the following question. So, Sam, what is your 60-second idea to change the world?
That is so unfair. Look, I think the search for companionship is the most important search of your life. I think we change the world every day when we go to work and make online dating better. I think the world will be changed when everyone who wants companionship finds it. And in order for us to do that, we need to get everyone who wants companionship online. And we need to understand what happens to our users after the first date. And I think the big transformation will be as we your dating app, your dating site, go further and further with you on your dating quest, on your dating adventure, we will get so much more insight into what is working and what's not working that we can then update our algorithms, make your algorithms that much better, and lead to people being happier. And people being happier changes the world.
Beautiful. Thank you, Sam, tonight for giving us the inside scoop on the math behind matchmaking. in tonight's event, The Algorithm of Love. Now this meeting of Inforum and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.